An egg roll that big?
It seems like a good way to have a bad day. Yeah, it reminded me of those places that, like, you know, hey, eat the burger and it's free or whatever, like you see in other TV shows and movies. And I'm sure they exist in real life. I'm in Tennessee. They're probably here.
Like all the man versus food stuff?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, the thing looked like a duffel bag.
Maybe it was just the camera angle was like really low and it was wide and like the person was actually like far away and it was just a regular sized egg roll.
It's a lot of egg roll, I think. Because if it's a normal egg roll, what's the point, right?
That's true. That's true. But I think I would wander into that restaurant just like Michael and Holly to find out if it really were that big.
We will get to their special connection. But what are we talking about?
We are talking about episode 15 of season 7, The Search, originally airing on February 3rd, 2011. We have a legit cold open, which we will talk about. But first, right off the bat, I really, really, really want to say how much I love this episode. I love this episode. All parts of it. It's just a simple A and B plot, but I adore it.
You know, I think I said last time that I was looking forward to this one, and I do like it, but I think I don't like it as much as I thought I did.
I have a quibble that we can bring up later.
Okay.
That prevents it from being like one of my top episodes. But in general, I really like this episode and I like where it shows up. I feel like the timing of it feels really right based on the rest of the season and all the anticipation that we've been going through. We've had a couple kind of like episodes. So I feel like anything that they're giving us right now is it feels like such a treat. And this episode definitely feels like some sort of a payoff. And that's what makes me really like it.
I'm interested to see what your quibble is. I honestly don't know. So that'll be fun.
So let's start off right at the beginning and talk about our cold open, which opens with Kelly and Ryan making an announcement.
They're divorced.
Wait, what?
The last thing they want is drama, Tiff. So we just settle down.
Wow. Over the weekend, Ryan, Bailey, Howard, and I got divorced.
Sweet. Free ring.
They were on a romantic weekend together. They were up all night, and Ryan cried to the sunrise. Very romantic.
They were in the Poconos. Do you know where the Poconos? Do you know anything about the Poconos?
No.
All right. So let me tell you. Regionally, the Poconos is basically like, and I believe it was a Michael and Donna went up to the Poconos also. So the Poconos are, it's like this romantic love location in Pennsylvania, and it's so precedented on like these romantic weekends. Like they have these hotel rooms where they have a tub in the room shaped like a giant champagne glass.
Oh boy.
Like, and heart-shaped beds, like that kind of like cheesy 80s romance Poconos in like these little resorts like all over the place. So that's what the idea of like, oh, we were up in the Poconos. Everyone knows like, oh, you're there for like a romance weekend.
Yeah. You don't go up there like just to work away from your family.
No, no. They do have like family things that's to do good. Up there. But if you're just like, oh, me and my significant other mm-hmm. are going to the Pocono, they're like, okay. Oh,
so they
oh,
were up there. Yeah. They were in a champagne shaped bathtub.
Ryan's crying.
They see yeah. a chapel. And in this romantic situation, love is in the air. They decide, you know what? We shouldn't be married anymore.
Wait. What? Sorry, when did you get married?
Like a week ago. We got really wasted. Just felt right.
You didn't invite any of us?
We are getting divorced, Andy. This is such a raw time.
So sad.
They want people to take sides. No one takes any sides with anybody. The office just moves on. It seems like the drama they didn't want, they didn't get, and then they're a little upset about it. They do want drama.
I do like the way they do this cold open. I think it is a funny announcement for the two of them to have, and it does come out of nowhere. It's quite the shock and surprise, and it's funny. So I enjoy the way they did this.
But the couple at the real heart of the episode are Michael and Holly. We see that some time has passed since the previous episodes. A few weeks, Michael and Holly clearly have had arguments about getting back together. They're having one in the kitchen as Jim is trying to get Michael out the door for a sales call.
We know we're going to start dating. Why not now?
We don't know that.
Sure we do.
Why is it such a certainty that we're supposed to be together?
Why does the sun rise in the morning? Why do magnets stick together? Because everybody says so.
everybody.
Michael, I can't keep getting into a situation where I date whoever I'm working with.
Holly's basically like, well, you know, your decision isn't the only decision that matters here. And she storms off and he storms off. There's been some tension, I feel like, between the two, and it's definitely spilled over into the workplace.
I mean, yeah, you really also, you can't blame them when we hear Holly's reasoning that, like, she can't just go around dating whoever is in the office that she's working in. And I think that that's what she's feeling like. Like, she was with Michael, they broke up because she left, then she was with, I forgot his name already.
AJ,
he's so forgettable. Oh, poor AJ. And she was with AJ. They broke up because now she moved again. And it just feels like she's probably like, I don't want to fall into the same patterns of like just assuming I'm going to get back together with Michael, which is exactly what Michael is assuming. Yeah. So I understand her wanting a little space.
Yeah, I do too. And there's also, it's not said in this episode, but remember, she's there because Toby is on jury duty. And clearly, that's not like an open-ended engagement, right? He will come back at some point. So maybe it's in the back of her mind, I'm not going to be in Scranton forever. And, you know, I think that kind of leads her into this decision-making of, yeah, I've been on a bit of a cycle that I feel like I need to stop. And I think that's totally fair on her part.
So that kind of sets off the beginning of our A plot, and Jim and Michael are off to go on the sales call. Jim is not excited about spending a car ride with Michael after he just had an argument with Holly. But we also see our B plot getting kicked off because Jim is encouraging to Pam. I love this between them, actually. Like, this is, Jim is barely in this episode, but this moment that he is in there, he's trying to get Pam's attention. She's been very busy with her office management job. And so you can tell that, like, she hasn't been quite engaged in Jim's pranks or anything like that before, because she's always seems to be busy. Every time when Jim was going through all of his I have nothing to do, please entertain me, she kept pushing him off because she was busy. And she kind of does something similar like that in the beginning of this episode.
That's it? That's all I get? Even after all the hard work I put into celebrating your talent today?
All right, what'd you do?
Well, those things that you consider doodles, I consider art.
Where'd you put it?
And he tries to give her three clues, which she guesses right away.
When you're getting colder, you're really getting warmer.
The fridge.
Two, you have a better chance if you think Bob Vance.
The fridge, got
it. And the final clue.
Let's go!
You know what? Just think about it. You'll be fine.
He puts up one of her drawings on the refrigerator, and she notices, and a couple of the people in the office have put little captions underneath them, like funny little captions, and Pam really likes this, and it kind of sparks an idea. And I like that this B plot is kind of Pam taking on the role of the game master that Jim usually takes on in the office when Michael is gone.
Yeah, for a second I thought Pam was going to be upset that someone had like defaced her art. But yeah, she sees it as funny and an opportunity, I think, to do some office managery type stuff, you know, morale boosting, that sort of thing. And it launches into this whole B plot that is just, it's really, really funny to me.
What makes me love this about when Jim puts that up, it's that wonderful, when you're with somebody and they're proud of something that you do and they make the effort to show off that thing of their partner. I love that. That's like one of my love languages. I don't know, but that totally draws me into their relationship, and that like he notices something, he's so proud of it, and he takes it upon himself to show it off to people when Pam probably wouldn't have. And I really like seeing that side of them again. We don't really get a lot of their romance anymore now that they're married and they have the kid, and you know, the stories are moving on and we're more focused on the romance of Michael and Holly right now. So it's nice that they threw that in there.
Yeah, I mean, they're not going to the Poconos and getting divorced, you know, so boring.
They got to do something.
So this sets up the episode. So we have Michael and Jim going on the sales call, and that runs its course while Pam is holding a new caption contest. That kind of is what runs the rest of the episode. Like you said at the beginning, a pretty simple episode in terms of structure. especially compared to some of the ones we've had recently where there's like three or four threads that we have to follow.
Since it's so simple, we might as well, let's focus on the search first, and then we can go to the quips. Or do you want to do the quips because the search is kind of like the meat of this episode?
Mm-hmm. Let's do the quips.
Okay, yeah, I think you're right. Let's do the quips first. So we already set that up. There is a caption contest kind of going on. It happened naturally where people just put something up. We thought Pam was going to be bad, but she isn't. She loves the idea. But someone gets in the way, and that someone is Gabe.
That's right. Because Pam's original artwork was a saber printer, has a little Dunder Mifflin sticker on the side of it. And there's two captions written on it.
I'm a suck, suck, suckity saber.
Booyah!
No.
But I suppose the second one is the better written line.
You suppose?
What's it say?
I'm supposed to be wearing red gloves, but my color cartridge portal got jammed again.
Okay. No.
So it's making fun of the company, and that's what sets Gabe off, where he thinks that's inappropriate, should not make fun of the company, and just out of bounds.
But Pam gets really into this idea, and she's inspired to make another drawing for everyone to add their captions to. But Gabe is also there to stand in the way of that fun as well, with a whole bunch of rules, mostly do not talk bad about the company. And he's trying to promote one of Saber's new products, which are these sticky quips, which are kind of like speech bubble shaped sticky notes that he wants everyone to use for their captions.
Sticky quips are fun. They are safe. They are handy. I like to use sticky quips as regular post-it notes when I'm in a fun mood. Not every day.
Everyone in the room is just kind of super bummed about Gabe's rules, because part of the fun of the original drawing was that it is poking fun at the place that they're working. And so they decide to take their caption contest underground, and the underground being IM message.
Yeah, they're just going to do it on IM. And yeah, and Gabe's left out of that group chat, I guess.
Go get him. Start quipping.
Pam, I think I'm going to send you an IM.
Oh, okay.
Send me one, too.
Yeah. Put me on that.
CC.
Yeah, so this new drawing by Pam is two dogs on a desert island. So a couple dogs, couple of trees, you know, very clearly like deserted island type vibe. And this is what sets off the IMing. And Gabe comes back in later and is like, why aren't there any captions up? You know, why didn't anybody come up with anything?
So what, no one's even going to try?
Guess not.
Oh, come on. My rules could not possibly have been that oppressive.
You crushed our spirits, Gabe. Congrats. You're a big man, huh? Takes a lot to destroy the creativity of a whole group of people.
Way to go, Gabe.
But then there's that little da-dink, and everyone in the office laughs, and Gabe is tipped off. They're all sending each other messages, and I'm not involved. And he goes around trying to catch everyone's screens, but everyone's closing the window as fast as they can. But Phyllis, as we've seen in the past, when she was having trouble with Ryan's BlackBerry like a million years ago, that she could not click the little X fast enough, and Gabe catches her IM window open and prints it out and begins to read off all of the captions and tell everyone how inappropriate and how disappointed he is.
So there's a lot of Saber jokes like before. One is, I told you not to buy a Saber brand lifeboat. That one made me laugh.
I thought that one was one of the best ones.
Yeah.
To me, the jokes, they start degrading very quickly. It devolves into just this epic tearing apart of Gabe. And one of the best ones, turns out, is from our quiet little Angela.
Is that a palm tree, or did Gabe get skinnier? Either way, let's pee on it.
Ladies and gentlemen, I think we have a winner.
Yes, yeah. Well done.
Whose is it? Who wrote that?
Yeah, the camera like catches her smiling when it's red.
Oh, and there was a nice little visual nod, whereas Gabe is reprimanding the group for being so immature that he walks away, and there's a bunch of basic, like, kick me style signs out of the sticky quips stuck to Gabe's back. He's totally like the teacher, and all these kids are just absolutely bullying him.
Yeah, he even says, I don't want to be your babysitter. Like, okay, Gabe, too late. So that's the B plot. Solid. I like making fun of Gabe. It's always a good time.
Yeah, it's nice and light because we really want to focus on the A plot, but this is like a nice, light little back and forth funny thing that it's, I like that they paired it with this big search that we will get into talking about, because you don't want too much competition with the with that plot. You want to be able to focus on it a lot, but you need something to break it up. So I like the way they did that.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right.
So Michael and Jim are off to their sales call. Michael is a little down in the car, just as Jim had expected, but Michael insists he needs to go to the bathroom pretty much right away. So they make a quick stop at a gas station, and Jim gets a phone call from Helene that everything's fine, but Cece's locked in a car.
Everything is not fine, Helene.
A tiny thing. I locked her in the car.
What?
Oh, she's smiling. She's happy.
Oh, my God.
But Jim, I don't have a spare key.
Just stay there. I'll be there in 1 second. Michael! Michael!
Jim cannot get a hold of Michael in the bathroom. He doesn't hear him knocking, and he feels that he just needs to. He can't even wait for Michael. He needs to go right now to get his daughter out of a locked car. So he leaves. He speeds away from the gas station and abandons Michael. Michael comes out, and Jim is nowhere to be found.
Jim had told a guy pumping gas, like, hey, there's a guy in the bathroom. Tell him to call the office when he comes out. But the guy just leaves. He doesn't help Michael out.
He waits for like a second and looks at the bathroom and is like, I can't wait for this. And he goes.
So Michael's off on his own, and he talks the gas station attendant into letting him use his phone. But he says, oh, you don't have any of my numbers.
So, yeah, Michael is trapped in the modern technology pitfalls of not knowing any of your actual numbers that you call frequently because they're all just there waiting for you.
Yeah.
Which I kind of understand. I know like two numbers now when I used to know dozens.
Same. So at this point, Michael is on his own. Jim calls Pam to tell her what's going on, tells her where they left Michael. She's going to put out an APB.
Otherwise known as an Ask Pam Beasley. Did the phone cut out?
Nope.
All right, just call me after the doctor.
I love Pam's cheesy dad jokes. They're so good.
They are good.
So Pam gathers a search and rescue committee. And this consists of Dwight, Aaron, and Holly. It seems like at first it was only going to be Holly and Aaron, or possibly even just Holly. Aaron insists on joining Holly, and then Dwight insists on joining the two of them because he's the tracker extraordinaire, so he should go along, and he doesn't trust either of the two women. So they go off to find and rescue Michael. They know the location and address of the gas station where Michael was left, and so that's where they're headed.
And they need to take Aaron's car because Dwight's car is full of fox meat.
So we cut back to Michael at the gas station, and now that he knows he can't make any phone calls because he doesn't have his phone or his wallet with him, that was in Jim's car, he decides to go, as he says, on a walkabout. And he doesn't want the camera to follow him. He shoos them away, and he thinks he's going to be walking back to the office, so he kind of picks a direction and he's off. And I like how they did this. I like that a lot of the shots of Michael, or I should say all of the shots of Michael on his walkabout, they're all from a distance. They are all zoomed in. We are left to assume that he still has his mic on, which we've seen in previous episodes, the reference to them being mic'd all the time. And so, yeah, we have this element of the camera kind of stealthily following him around that he doesn't really know that they're there, or at least he shooed them away and he feels satisfied with that.
Yeah, I love all the long like spy shots. I think that's a nice touch. Mm-hmm. And when they lose him a little bit later on, like the cameraman's like running around the corner and then they realize that they've lost track of him. It's great.
Yeah, so the search committee goes off to the gas station, and right away, they are trying to figure out which way Michael went. They talk to the gas station attendant. He affirms that Michael was there, but he left. Dwight, thinking he is an extraordinary tracker and saying, like, well, Michael's probably going back to the office, points the way over to the office. But Holly mentions, like, are you sure he didn't go the other way?
Oh, really? You don't think he walked by that bakery just for the smell of it?
She's right. He went that way.
All right. You get a swelled head. You're no tracker. That's right.
I got a real, like, E.T. vibe from this. At one point, Dwight's like, tap into your shared mind. She thinks the way Michael thinks, and she understands him. And so, yeah, they take off, kind of following her lead. Aaron, by the way, is not happy about this. Aaron is still on her tirade against Holly. In fact, earlier in the episode, she judges Holly.
He thinks she's so special, and she's so not. Her personality is like a 3. Her sense of humor is a 2. Her ears are like a 7 and a 4. Add it all up, and what do you get? 16. And he treats her like she's a perfect 40. It's nuts.
So Aaron is kind of, she's watching this unfold, and she continues to be unhappy with how much attention of Michael's Holly is getting. And it's not jealousy on her part. I really think it is, she just doesn't think that Michael's doing the right thing for himself by continuing to chase Holly.
Yeah, Aaron's anti-Holliness feels like it comes out of nowhere, but it does feel a little bit of like Aaron's trying to protect him and wants him to have the best, and she isn't seeing that from Holly, especially because Aaron came into this relationship after seeing that Holly hurt Michael.
Yeah.
So that's what she's like basing everything on, is that like they had this relationship, Michael got extremely hurt from it. And so she's already seeing Holly in kind of a negative light, especially because Aaron has elevated Michael to this father figure of hers. And so she hasn't yet seen Holly be worthy of Michael in her eyes. And I think that that's why she's having a problem with him. That's why she's having a problem with her.
She doesn't want a stepmom.
That's it.
Dwight, on the other hand, also sees this and begins to sort of take advantage of it in the way that Dwight does, kind of mocking her. And the whole time Holly's like trying to downplay this like obvious connection. Dwight's like, hey, you know, close your eyes. Can you see what he sees? You know, he's being obnoxious about it. But it's obviously getting to Holly, even though she's trying to downplay it. And we see that she's sort of, I think, as they go through this journey following Michael, she is realizing how alike or how in tune with each other they are.
All right. Here is where my quibble comes in.
Quibble me.
Yeah. Okay. Should I use some sticky quibbles?
Yes. Yes, please.
All right. Okay. So this is, it's the acting here that makes me mad, because so Holly, played by Amy Ryan, I do not buy her attitude here. As you said, that Holly was like kind of not like being like a what do you mean? No, it's just a coincidence. Like the way that's acted, it doesn't seem genuine to me. And if it isn't genuine, if she's just like a like that fake compliment attitude. Do you know what I'm getting at? The whole old thing, like that kind of attitude. I think that that's wrong for this. I wish it were more of a genuine like coincidence that Holly is suggesting all these things, but she has like this sly little smile sometimes in this episode, and I think that that was like the wrong choice for attitude when it came to her tracking down Michael. I would have liked it to be more of a organic, slow reveal feeling, but instead I feel like she's a little bit too knowing and then downplaying it. And I don't like that false modesty feeling that we get from Holly throughout the entire search. So that's my quibble. I feel like if that were played a little bit differently, I would have been so much more in tune with this episode and loved it even more than I do. But the whole concept, I love. I just have a problem with the execution.
I can see that. I don't think I thought that while watching it, but I definitely see that point of view.
But I try and ignore it.
Push down your feelings.
So in the middle of this, there is a call from Pam, and Pam is requesting a couple supplies be picked up since Dwight and Aaron and Holly are out anyway. I do like the little back and forth on the phone with Pam and Dwight.
Goodbye.
No, wait. Hey, while you're out, could you pick up some paper towels and chocolate syrup? We have ice cream, so I thought we
Pam,
could
Pam, this isn't a shopping trip.
No.
This is a manhunt slash rescue mission.
Okay, I just, when you're done or anytime it's convenient, I just thought since you're out.
Pam, I'm obviously going to get that stuff for you, so just shut up.
Okay, well, it wasn't obvious.
Their relationship is falling into kind of like big brother, little sister. There's a little bit of teasing, but there's also respect and care back in there. And when someone asks you to do something, you basically like tell them no, but you're actually going to do it. It's really cute.
So let's check in with Michael. He's getting hungry at this point. So he's walked past the bakery just for the smell of it. He went and talked to some pets in a pet store.
Oh, it was so cute. It was so cute. He's being all sad with the puppies.
Hey, you guys, listen to me. Don't get hung up on just one girl. Because there are a lot of other girls out there. Look over there. See? They look cute.
And he tells a snake that he's disgusting and he'll never find love.
You are disgusting. You'll never find love. Blech.
Oh, poor snake.
But he's hungry, so he tries to pawn off his watch for a hot dog. But the hot dog vendor guy's not having it.
What do you do with the hot dogs that you don't sell?
Throw them away.
Well, okay, instead of throwing them all away later, why don't you just throw one away now into my mouth?
No.
Okay. You've just lost my business.
And then he goes into this Chinese restaurant with the big egg roll and orders a full meal, eats it, and then he's going to dine and dash. But he has a moment of shame as he's trying to leave, and he walks back in and confesses. The guy in the restaurant is not very sympathetic to Michael's plight.
You have no money, but you dined so much.
Well, the number three is not such a giant feast.
And they put him up on the wall of shame. He has a sign that says thief, and he has to hold it for a picture.
Meanwhile, Dwight is running Pam's errand, and he is coming out of the grocery store. He sees Holly messing with one of those like cell phone sign up providers outside of the grocery store. She is filling out the form. She requests her free stress ball that they always give away, some sort of swag for you signing up. And the person doing the signing up notices that, of course, Holly uses a fake name.
Sure thing. Here you go, Miss. Okay, Fanny Smellmore. Real original.
What?
You know what? Say hi to Orville Tuttenbacher for me.
Tuttenbacher.
Orville Tuttenbacher, that's Michael's millionaire character that farts
popcorn. Of course, he was here. She's the key.
Mrs. Fanny Smellmore and Orville Tuttenbacher, I mean, they're obviously meant for each other. So this is another coincidence that, you know, Holly does this quirky little thing of signing up with a funny fake name, and Michael was there earlier doing exactly the same. They're so meant to be together.
This is where they end up going into the restaurant because Holly sees that ad for the giant egg roll.
Are their egg rolls really that big?
They discover that Michael was also there because they see his picture. The camera, after they see Michael's picture with holding up the thief sign, pans down, and there is a picture of Creed also holding a thief sign on the wall of shame of all their food stealers. Well, we do know from the Casino Night episode that he does enjoy stealing things. So this is totally within Creed's character.
Dwight is pretty inappropriate with the guy, talking loudly, using hand signals. The guy clearly speaks English just fine. Dwight continues to speak that way, even though they are having a conversation. It's not a great moment for Dwight.
But this leads the search party to kind of a dead end a bit, and they're left out wondering where the heck Michael went. And similarly, when we pan back to Michael. This is where the camera has also lost Michael, where we saw him walking down the street. He makes a sudden turn down an alley and the camera cannot find him. So everyone is a little bit lost. Michael's extra lost right now. Not even the camera has him. And the search party doesn't quite know what to do next. So they kind of regroup and they discuss, like, all right, what can we do? Holly also seems to have run low on clues to follow herself. And everyone's trying to figure out what to do.
Okay, look, let's just go up somewhere high and see if we could spot him on the street below.
That is the stupidest idea I've ever heard. No. Tap into your common mind and tell us what he would do next.
Ugh, I'm not playing.
This causes the group to split up. Holly decides she's going to follow her instincts and go to a high place to look to see if they could see Michael on the street. And Dwight is off to... Where's Dwight going?
He finds a bowling alley he's going to go look in. This is my quibble. I didn't know I had a quibble until just now, but...
Okay.
The whole time... Dwight is like realizing this connection between the two of them. Why wouldn't he follow her? She's been right so far the whole time.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Like, why wouldn't he follow? Because all the other places that Holly kind of led them were like instinctual things. Also, it had nothing to do with like, hey, I think Michael went this way, besides maybe the initial bakery.
Aaron, though, does follow Holly. She has now seen what is happening, and we see Holly like go up the stairs in this tall building. Aaron is a few flights behind her, and as Holly gets out to the roof, the camera pans all the way around Holly, which I think is a really nice reveal, because we as the audience and Holly see Michael at the same time, and he's up there looking over the edge, trying to see if he could see Dunder Mifflin, if he could figure out where he was.
This is the best moment of the entire episode. I love this moment between them. I love that they accidentally stumble upon each other. I mean, Holly wasn't going up there thinking Michael was up there. And I think that Michael really felt a connection with Holly here in that she found him and that it feels kind of fated that they ran into each other here. He is at the top of a building in the middle of nowhere. Like, he didn't tell anyone where he was. Nobody saw him from below. Like, nobody, as far as he knew he was up there. And in the same way, Holly had no idea that just this random building, they run into each other. So it's that, like, that coming together, that like romantic comedy fate moment where the two of them are on this rooftop together. And I think that all those emotions that bring people together, Michael's feeling all of that when he sees her. And after kind of the initial, like, what are you doing here? I can't believe you're here. Michael confesses to her, I've just missed you so much.
Michael?
Hi. How did you know I was up here?
What are you doing up here?
I got turned around. I thought I could see Dunder Mifflin.
Dunder Mifflin?
Yeah. Wow. I just missed you so much.
I missed you too.
Really?
Yeah.
Can I kiss you?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's this wonderful way they literally found each other again. And it's what we've all been waiting for. It's what Michael's been waiting for. And Holly finally, like, letting it happen. I think that meeting on the roof was her sign. And it's just such a great moment between them. I was crying. I might be crying now. Just a little bit.
The two of them were crying. And Aaron makes it to the roof to see this and smiles as she sees them kiss. And so I think we're led to believe that she now understands that this connection they have is a good one.
So yeah, that's basically the end of the episode. They don't really take us much further in the Holly Michael storyline because they gave us this beautiful rom-com ending, and I absolutely adore it. I love it so much. It's so good. I love them together. I love how happy they are.
Well, the next episode is named PDA, so I guess we can make some assumptions about what's coming.
So yeah, we've closed out this episode. I don't think we have much more to discuss, and our next episode we'll be talking about is PDA, episode 16. We are taking a little break, so we will be back in 2 weeks talking about that episode. And until then, you can go on over to our Twitter account and tweet at us at tall_beats. We are also there individually at ISMH and at Tiff Arment. You can subscribe to become a member at The Incomparable and get fun goodies at the end of the year, access to our members-only bonus feed, and you can join us in the conference room, our members-only Slack. I say this every time. We're going to be gone for 2 weeks now. You have plenty of time to go and do all of these things before we're back discussing PDA.
Do it. Do it now.
Do it. Just go. Just
one,
go
two,
do it.
1, 2, 3. Go. Do it now.
Oh, it is on like Genghis Khan wearing Sean John in Bhutan.